Hearing none, we'll move next to the approval of minutes. First up is the minutes of our February 19th, 2019 meeting. They were circulated last meeting as well. Are there any comments, questions, or concerns regarding those minutes?
Motion to approve them.
There's been a motion to approve the minutes as presented. There's a second. Is there any dissent to approving the minutes? Hearing none, the minutes of February 19th, 2019 are approved. Next are the minutes of our March 5th, 2019 meeting. Are there any comments, questions, or concerns concerning those minutes?
I motion to approve them.
There's been a motion to approve the minutes as presented. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
There's a second. Is there any dissent to approving the minutes as presented? Hearing none, the minutes of March 5th, 2019 are approved. Next up, we have a presentation by President Pollack. My understanding is she will be here actually a little bit later in the meeting, so once she arrives, we'll jump right into that. That will then move us into Assembly Committee and Liaison Reports. First up is Assembly Reports. Student Assembly, I see Drew isn't here. Joe, do you have anything from the Student Assembly to report?
Our election period begins tonight, starting at 6 p.m. after the mandatory campaign session, but it goes throughout the month of March. Voting begins the 25th to the 28th. In addition, undergraduate student trustee elections, they don't start campaigning until Wednesday evening, so more like Thursday morning. Voting will go the same time period, so basically every undergraduate position in shared governance is up for grabs, so it's a fun time over here. At our assembly this past Thursday, we held two teach-ins from two different student organizations, one from Students for Justice in Palestine, the other from Cornelians for Israel, talk about the issue of BDS on campus. I could only imagine that that's going to be an ever-growing conversation about the month of March and probably into April or whatever it is. Charlie Van Loan also came to the Student Assembly to gauge interest on a couple different topics. He was before the teach-in, so everyone in that audience heard him to listen to it, so it was a great turnout for Charlie. tonight is our town hall with several different Ithaca people. I forget the exact names, but housing, does Cornell care, so issues of workers' rights will be discussed there. And then, blah, blah, blah. Anything else interesting? Nope, that's it for us.
Thank you. Any questions for the Student Assembly and Joe?
Linda. How many folks are running for president?
So for president, there are three individuals running for president. Full disclosure, I'm one of them. Those are the three. For executive vice president, we have three also running. And for undergraduate student elected trustee, I think there are 10 candidates.
Wow.
So, lots of people.
Fantastic. So, and best of luck, Joe.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Joe or the Student Assembly? Hearing none, next up is the Graduate Professional Student Assembly. Rena.
We had some fruitful discussions surrounding career services, and we had a guest from the Career Services Office in our meeting yesterday.
Fantastic. Any questions for Rena or the GPSA? Hearing none, move on to the Employee Assembly. Craig is not here. He sent me a message that he would be late or not able to attend. Are there any members from the Employee Assembly with anything to report?
We are working towards elections. So that is going to be happening towards the end of March and the beginning of April.
Thank you. Any questions for the Employee Assembly? Hearing none, last but certainly not least is the Faculty Senate. Charlie.
So tomorrow Martha's going to be coming back, and Mary Appleman, who was here last week, is going to talk on core values. And then we hope to bring to a vote our plan to incorporate researchers, extension, and lecturers into the Senate. And we're pretty much at the time now where we need to vote, and hopefully that'll go well. But it may we may run out of time, and it may have to just be postponed to April. We'll find out.
Thank you. Any questions for Charlie, the Faculty Senate? Hearing none, that completes assembly reports. Next up is committees. Joe for the executive committee.
We didn't meet last Friday. We met the Friday before, talked about various things, but we went over that Friday meeting part of last week's meeting, so nothing to really.
Thank you. Any questions for the executive committee? Hearing none, next up will be the co-judicial committee. Gab.
The committee is continuing with its review of campus culture. Meeting again next week. Tomorrow is our first Wednesday off
in a while. Okay. Any questions for Dale or the CJC? Hearing none, Hearing none, next up is Campus Infrastructure Committee. Bob.
We haven't met in a bit. We have our next meeting a week from today. We have several topics we're moving slowly on, but the most timely thing is that we are hosting, together with the Executive Committee here, Bill McKibben's live conversation with the community about divestment tomorrow night in Hall Auditorium at 7 p.m. So please do come. Please bring your friends. We're taking a bit of a risk to try and have it in such a big room, and I'd like it to reflect well in the community. So if you can come, it should be a good event.
Thank you, Bob.
Do you have lots of questions submitted?
We have about 8 questions submitted in advance, and they're good questions, and the others. We're going to alternate the questions submitted in advance and live questions from the audience back and forth as time allows, and if we run out of advance, I think it'll be a lot of the audience.
Questions for Bob with CIC? Hearing none, next we have T and CWC.
So the CWC has finalized its resolution proposing to investigate the adequacy of the childcare center at Cornell, so that will be discussed. I think I moved it on today. And then we're still working on the smoking tobacco / nicotine survey on campus. We met with the IRP yesterday, and so right now we're looking at the timeline ending for the implementation date being in September 2019, so next semester. And I'm sure, did you have a question?
I
thought we were going to try and get that up this year.
Yes.
Yeah, so
I joined T at the meeting yesterday. For context, it was T, myself, as well as Laura Santa Cruz from the Scorton Center of Cornell Health, and I'm blanking on the other woman's name, who's from...
Leslie and
Laura. Yes. So Leslie Meyer-Hoffner, I believe. And so we were there, we talked about it, and the concern was, in essence, that with the timing remaining in the semester, realistically, it's less than 2 weeks from now until spring break, or really 2.5 weeks until spring break. The timing between that and the timing after means that there were serious concerns about our ability to get things out in a way that would reach the community and have it be statistically significant reach. What we discussed was, because in essence this has been going on for 2 years and that the delay is frankly unacceptable, that we would in essence set it up so that it is locked in and on autopilot, such that the dates we're picking, T and myself and the CWC are going to sit down and pick dates such that it will be locked in and keyed in essence, that it will be a push, in essence, whatever happens in the fall, regardless of the new leadership, it will go off, the data will come in, and then hopefully it will be said and done. It's disappointing that it's taken so long, and unfortunately, to be honest, the Office Assemblies gave us some poor information in the fall semester about their capabilities, which resulted in the fall being delayed. Had we been connected with these people correctly in the fall, I think we would have been able to do it in the spring, but that delay, unfortunately, means that the timing is just such that we could rush it, but the concern is if we don't get good enough data, then we've actually wasted our chance. So that's what we discussed, and there we are.
The larger issue is not communicating across all of the different parties that are dealing with this, so lack of communication between the previous CWC and me and the rest of the current CWC. So there was a document of recommendations / next steps to take in implementing the survey that was devised at the end of summer of 2018, and it was never actually given to me until spring 2019, so this semester. I didn't see it all throughout last semester. And so we were basically working in the dark. And so now the process is even more protracted than it needs to be. And so, we actually had a meeting on Monday between 12 and 3, and I was hoping that everyone who's interested in this issue, especially exec, because Matthew came to one of our meetings and was like, "Oh, exec is concerned, it's taking so long." But I was like, well, I haven't heard from exec until now, and I haven't had any feedback from you all on how to facilitate the process until it was, "Oh, this process is unreasonable, proceeding unreasonably." So just kind of facilitating better conversation. But I will send an email out, through you and from CWC. But right now, we want to meet with Leslie and Laura, who are Leslie is the representative of the IRP. She has experience on how to craft the survey instruments, and Laura has experience on public health issues. So they made the survey, and like they are like our point people for implementing this. So we'll be meeting with them sometime between 12 and 3 on Monday next week. So everyone is invited, especially Zach, and then CWC members will be getting that email by this afternoon, like this evening.
Thank you. And just to be clear, this is not T's fault. It was CWC's fault, as I mentioned, unfortunately. We were working with the Office of Assemblies in the fall to try and get this out in the fall. We had a schedule that was working out. The Office of Assemblies was unaware of the complexity involved, and the Office of Assemblies pledged to reach out to IRP and other entities in November so we can, in essence, have it ready by the spring. The spring, we found out they unfortunately had not done so, and that unfortunately put us behind the point where we finally were able to touch base. The meeting started early in February, and now to the point where timing is a concern. The assembly does, and the exec office discusses, we do have the ability, in essence, to still send it out. We have standing authorization, but we will have to consider what we'd like to do, because we have a questionnaire that was generated by Cornell Health and last year's CWC, so we can discuss if we just think it's important to go out now. We can. IRP has said that we could, in essence, autopilot on the fall, but that's a larger discussion that CWC and the exec will have to have, but we're open to all input on that regard. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't actually know what's best. This is definitely not my expertise, or most of us in this room aren't in surveys like that and solving public health problems like this, but depending on when it's planned to go out in the fall, I'm wondering if maybe we should just put it out in the spring, because once the fall semester starts, you're going to be starting the calendar again from the beginning, and the amount of time that you're going to have to educate the community. Mm-hmm. We still have a month and a half to 2 months left of classes for undergraduates and graduate students that were here. If we announce the process that it's going to go out, you know, in the last week of classes now, you have a full month to educate the community and to have a real discussion on it. Unless you're planning on putting it out after October in the fall, you're not going to have that much time in the fall. And at that point, it's already going to be October, and then you're now almost a year and a half behind what was planned for last year. Yeah. So I'm sure the committee will discuss this, but my suggestion is to consider putting it out at the end of the semester, because the amount of time that you're going to be losing by extending it another 6 months might be greater than the advantage you're going to get by planning a more substantive education period.
Yes.
I can respond to that. So we can have it in the fall next year and still start the educational materials like being published right now. So there's like we can have several meetings. I know we talked to Laura about like having teach-in/info sessions like this semester, and so that can still be done. The other concern is that there are a number of other surveys going out at the end of like from now to the end of the semester. And so since we want this survey to go to every single person other than like a randomized sample, for instance, we want to go to every single person, so not bombarding people with surveys, because there's a number of them like planned out for the rest of the semester.
Thank you. And just finally on that, again, the meeting on Monday will discuss this. We also have the ability, if we like, to bifurcate these surveys, such that we send it to some constituencies now and some constituencies later, based on who we can reach. So, I mean, there's a full option or range of options in front of the committee. IRP really recommended we do it in the fall. As I mentioned before, that is concerning. And if we were going to do that at all, I would strongly encourage us to make sure it's automated such that there's no further intervention required, because, again, we tried to do this last year, we tried to do it this year. At this point, the amount of time that's been burned is unacceptable, and therefore we need to move forward. But the CWC meeting on Monday, we can address that. If anyone has any comments, please feel free to raise them now, or if you'd like to send me or T an email, please do. Because, again, we need to determine how we're going to address this, whether that be going out now, when in the spring, and then if we're going to go with the fall, on when in the fall. For context, we actually do have a working Qualtrics, I think demo is the word, where we plugged in a version of the survey that was the last draft from the fall semester, which is, in essence, it's an operational draft. It works perfectly through Qualtrics, so we have the ability to send that out, but we need to discuss how and when we do so. Any final comments on that? Bob?
Can I hear a little bit more about what the competing surveys would be that we should be concerned about? I mean, everything else being equal, I'd love to see it go up to spring, but if it's really a problem with competing stuff,
yeah,
we need
to. Yeah, honestly, it's something, I don't know if you can meet the Monday time, but it's something that we can continue to bring up with them, because
I know one of the concerns that they had raised before we eventually like met with Matt, and he shared that he had done like a demo on Qualtrics, was that like the survey would be really hard to program. And then Matt said, well, I've done a demo on Qualtrics. So, I mean, these are issues that we can continue to bring up. I do have a list of other surveys that are going out that I can read out to you if you'd like. So March 10th to 24th is the survey of most first-year students. April 14th through to May 5th is the Cornell Experience Survey and Sexual Violence Survey. And for graduate students, and that's for all undergraduate students, February 25th up till March 26th is the Doctoral Student Experience Survey for all PhD students. So, yeah, those are the surveys.
We should also note that we're talking about that not all surveys go out to all people. Even if it's a survey meant for undergraduates, there are some that are community wide where everyone will be asked to participate. There are others where they'll take a randomized sample. So they actually, in talking with them, they suggested a randomized sample, and respectfully, I told them that that's not something the assembly is interested in. If they're going to be talking about tobacco, everyone needs to have the opportunity to weigh in. They choose not to, that's their prerogative. But obviously, this conversation will continue Monday. And then the options are, as I said, to do it now or do it in the fall. We have a working survey, and we will move forward. Hopefully, I'm going to make a decision about how we wish to move forward. That being said, are there any final comments on that?
So I just have one. I mean, this is more than a year and a half. It's 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, Ulysses tried to do this for 2 years. It really is kick the ball down. I mean, it is just not acceptable how long this has taken. And for 25 minutes of someone's time, these surveys don't sound too onerous. Really, yeah. It does. It's just, 25 minutes, sit down. Probably won't even take that long. I don't understand it, and I'm worried about the lack of continuity of leadership. Like, who knows who's still going to be here, who's going to see this through. So I'd really like us to
move ahead.
Yeah.
Thank you. And actually, just on that, Qualtrics, when you program a survey, it comes up with an estimated time for completion. This survey was around 12 to 15, said average of 12, range of 9 to 15, or give or take. So less than 25. But we will discuss that on Monday. That being said, we now have liaison reports. First up would be President's Council on Sexual Violence Prevention. Rita,
no
sorry.
No meeting yet.
Okay.
No notification of any meeting for this semester.
Okay.
Yet.
Okay.
And then policy and budget.
You have in mind.
There is a meeting next Monday on the 18th, and we're going to be discussing the final sort of draft for web accessibility.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Rena about PAG or the CSVP, which has not met? Hearing none, would be student insurance, the benefits committee. I know Joe is on that. Rena, I believe you are also attend the meetings.
Meetings have been canceled one after another because of the snow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any questions regarding that? Hearing none, last but not least is campus planning committee, Chris and Marty.
Sure. The campus planning committee met last week, and our guest was VP Paul Streeter from the Budget and Planning Office. A number that was a good number that took me a while to dig out was that the university expects the total undergrad enrollment to be 15,800 students by the time North Campus expansion is complete. Last fall, there was 15,100, and they admitted that it was a little bit overbooked. And the idea is for the next 2 years to stick to 15,000 students for undergrad enrollment and then add 200 each year after until you get to the total of 15,800, which was a pretty important thing for the campus planning committee to know how many people they needed to plan for. So that was something that was nice to see Paul there. I did get to ask a question about was in the capital planning budget, the operational budget specifically, are we setting aside money for sustainability? There's a lot of projects out there that are building renewal. Besides just building something new or knocking something down, we need to make improvements to different things. And I asked, where in the big pie chart of the whole operational university budget was it? And the answer was, there is no such thing. All the university's money is applied or in motion, I guess you could say. So it's all doing things, and so we're not really setting aside stuff in our rainy day fund in that aspect. If there was very specific initiatives that we would recommend from the CPC or somewhere else, that can set direction to it. But they don't have anything, and I was particularly interested because we only have 16 years really to get to that 2035 goal of carbon neutrality. So it was like, is this something that we're all saving up for together? Because the operational budget is like, I won't say that this is an exact percentage, but it's like 3% from each unit all across campus. So ILR is giving 3%, and it's for the things that the whole university needs. We also went into some of the differences about what the, there is two levels of oversight committees, the provost capital planning group, as well as the, and that's sort of where ideas are incubated. You know, the group of professionals sit together and try to talk about, like, where is this going to go, typically for projects that are over $5 million. To look at the scope and the concept before it becomes a project, and then it moves on to the Capital Funding and Priorities Committee, which is chaired by Joanne DiStefano, and the president and the provost is on it. Most recently in university history, we've moved to a 10-year capital plan, which is about $3 billion currently, and is prioritizing the renewal and critical maintenance around campus. And that was something that we were trying to, the CPC is really trying to figure out, and they want to come back to the UA, which is mostly made of campus-wide professionals, to try to talk about how can they start re-engaging and providing recommendations to the administration directly, because there seems to be some like overlap, and they're sort of trying to figure out how they can become more operational than more informational. And that is my update. Anything else, Marty?
Well, just to add to your point about sustainability, that is, one of the things that was brought up was not only is there a fund set aside to consider that, but how is sustainability built into project budgets, new projects, as well as, there was no clear answer to that. In fact, what was said was that sustainability is covered in the operational budget, which, as you remarked, is the smallest portion of the budget of building anything. It needs to be spread across for emergencies and everything else. And what was admitted basically was that there is no money, no significant amount of money for new or rebuilding projects, which is key towards sustainability, except if it is built into the project budget for a particular project. So building more campus, in other words, you would have to have built into it a sustainability component that would be key to carbon neutrality by 2035.
And touch on that, I would say not in an alarmist way. I imagine that the projects do have components of like we're buying environmentally sustainable lighting and things like that, but it's more like on the budget there's not a line item for sustainability, $3 million, here's everything under sustainability. It's more all on the big project. But it is something, at least from where we're sitting, that we are interested in, you know, adding a little bit more pressure to thinking big picture, how are we really going to get there, because we got to start 10 years ago. Thanks.
I have Richard on the speaker's list.
So you say there are $3 billion in the 10-year capital plan. Is that right?
The 10-year capital plan is currently about $3 billion.
So can you break that down between Cornell Tech and Ithaca, and then break down Ithaca, new projects, and remedial?
I personally cannot. But I can definitely take that question to either the committee or Paul Streeter and see if it. My understanding was it was mostly Ithaca based, everything that he was talking about, but I would have to follow up.
Thank you. Omar, do you want to respond to?
Yes, that was what was discussed was entirely Ithaca campus. The budget figure, $3 billion, it wasn't clear because there was a list put in very small type. I'm not trying to fault anybody for this, it's just that's the way the projection worked out. Of all the projects that are planned in the next 10 years, that would be those 3 billion. And as I, from what I could read from about 20 feet away from the list, everything I read was Ithaca campus. So but I asked for, we asked for the slides to be made available. They haven't yet been made available, so we could actually. And then on those slides, there were also breakdown figures on how the money would be spent for different sectors. He discussed the process for fielding campus development projects, that is, the multi-college inputs and requests, how they are weighed by the different committees, and so forth. That was the discussion.
Thank you. Other questions for Chris or Marty? Here, actually, Chris, quick question. I don't know if it was discussed with the enrollment figures. Is that going to 15,800? Is that including that some North Campus dorms are going to be taken out of use for a period to allow them to be refurbished or rehabilitated?
15,800 is the total number that will be in like 2023.
Okay.
So they do know that they're going to be offlining a certain section of it, which is why they know that they were 100 over this fall. And then they want to go back down to 15,000, keep that at 15,000 for the next 2 years. Well, I guess North Campus is doing its thing. And then after they hit the 2-year milestone, start adding 200 additional underpass.
Thank you. Any final questions or comments for Chris and Marty? Hearing none, that brings us into business of the day. First up is the reappointment of Ombudsman Charlie Walcott. Members who were here prior to 2 meetings ago, we heard from Charlie and Linda about the operations of their office and their current initiatives. About 2 weeks or so ago, I received a letter from President Pollack asking, with her nomination of Charlie Walcott to serve an additional 2-year term as University Ombudsman per the Code of Conduct and our Charter. This Assembly is required to vote up yes or no to concur with that appointment. We discussed it briefly at our meeting last week, and it is again up today for further discussion or potentially a vote if the Assembly is so inclined. Charlie would serve as a substitute for an additional 2-year term starting next year, so he would serve next year and the year after and then be up for reappointment or whatever he may choose to do. That being said, there were no comments or minimal comments last time. I didn't receive any comments or anything, any comments from the community or any other members in the interim. Are there any comments or questions about Charlie's reappointment as University Ombudsman? Yeah.
Is there any formal document that we approve, or do we just vote yes and that's in the record and that's formal for use?
So what will happen is if the Assembly chooses to vote, would vote yes or no. I will record the vote tally, and then I will send it to the actions listserv with a letter, which is President Pollack, which will say, we're pleased to inform you that the Assembly concurs with Charlie's reappointment. That letter will be sent. The letter, in essence, my letter will certify the vote tally in our formal action, and that letter will then go to the President and be incorporated into the formal record because this is not a formal resolution. Are there any other comments or questions regarding the Ombudsman reappointment process or Charlie's fitness to serve as Ombudsman? Hearing none, is there a motion to vote on Charlie's reappointment?
Move.
There's a motion. Second. Is there any dissent to voting? Seeing none, we'll go into a formal vote. Because this is a formal action, all those in favor, please raise your hand or placard. Okay, so all opposed. All like to abstain. The chair will vote in favor by a vote of 13-0-0. Charlie is formally confirmed as Assembly firmly concurs with Charlie Walcott's reappointment as University Ombudsman. I will transmit to the President shortly, and we look forward to having him serve for an additional 2-year term. That brings us to the next item on our agenda, which is Resolution 3, examining the need to augment the Cornell Child Care Facility. This resolution was introduced at our prior meeting by T, and on behalf of the Campus Welfare Committee, is in your packet. T, the floor is yours. Would you like to reintroduce the resolution?
So, Resolution 3 is asking the university administration to investigate expanding the Cornell Child Care Center. So, based on anecdotal evidence that it's currently inadequate.
Thank you. So that being said, if anyone would like to speak on this resolution, please raise your hand or placard. As Steve said, in essence, the resolution is requesting that the president and IRP and other entities examine, in essence, how long the wait list is. We've heard anecdotally that it's so long as people age out, such that a student who is 5 years old by the time they get to the point where they'd be called, they're no longer too old to attend the facility, and it's requesting information and a study that if we were to be expanded, would there be demand? I have Marty on the speaker's list.
Yeah, just according to the last resolve, it asks that by the end of the academic investigation be initiated, I guess that's the right word, right? Mm-hmm. Request permission by the end. So my suggestion is that there be not a designation of when the investigation should be commissioned, but when it should end, so that a report will be available. Because if we just initiate it by the end of 2019, back then here, 2020, then it could go on for years. I mean, so since this is not a very complicated issue, it may be, but if we have the central administration requesting it, it probably could go back to the survey about tobacco. And what we might suggest is that the results of the investigation, that the investigation be initiated and the results be made public by the end of the academic year 2020. In other words, so it'd be a full year. No, excuse me, by the end of the year, end of the spring, the fall term of 1920. So in other words...
That would be this coming fall.
Yes, this coming fall. I mean, there's a survey that we're asking, that you're asking for. If there's going to be some action taken, it would be, I'd suggest that it be initiated in the spring, and maybe take place a bit in the fall, and then the results be available. The wording might be presented to the University Assembly or to the Cornell, the appropriate mention. I said the University Assembly campus by the end of the fall semester 2020.
So in that case, thank you. Do you like to respond? And Marty, if you'd like to have language for that, we can then consider that as a formal amendment to the resolution.
Right, that's what I'm suggesting, but I suppose that the initiator can make a statement about that.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
So Marty...
That's fine. The reason, so you had proposed that in the edits that you had made to last week's version,
right. But
the wording of... your particular be it finally resolved clause made it seem like you wanted to expand the Cornell University Child Care Center by 2019 to 2020. I understand that that's not what you meant, but it was just the wording. So I didn't adopt that word because of that grammatical caveat. So because of just the way the clause was placed, it made it seem like you would have to expand it by 2018-2019.
I'm sorry. I mean, I can read this, but the last clause that I suggest to us all now that was in that says, and that the results of the investigation be made public, is what I'm suggesting. Not the results of the building of everything, but the results of the investigation.
Thank you, Marty. So in that case, Marty, I need someone, in that case, we'd like to amend it. I need someone to make a motion to amend the specific language they would like changed. You could change, for instance, on line 35, initiate to...
So can I read what I suggested, and then this is the amendment I proposed.
Okay, Marty.
Be it finally resolved that the University Assembly requests that President Martha Pollack initiate through the University Divisions of... This is all that remains the same. Divisions of Facilities and Campus Services, Budget Planning, and Human Resources in collaboration with the Director of the Cornell University Child Care Center, an investigation into the viability of expanding Cornell University Child Care Center, and that the results of this investigation be made public by the end of the, and then obviously I can change this now to by the end of the fall semester 2020.
Thank you, Mario. You want to write this down for Brian S.?
So that's your motion.
Is there a second on that motion to amend?
Sure.
There's a second. Okay, I will restate the motion in one moment once I finish writing it down. Okay. So the changes primarily occur on line 33, where the commissions will become
So the only change to line 33 are, be it finally resolved that the University Assembly requests that President Martha Pollack initiate through,
yes.
And then everything else is the same,
thank
down
you.
To the last line, 36 and 37, I guess it is, I have 37 for it. After the words University Child Care Center is added the following, and that the results of this investigation be made public, and then by the end of academic year, it should be by the end of the fall semester 2020.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So in that case, there's been a motion, there's been a second. We will now move to discussion on the amendment. To be clear,
the fall semester.
To be clear, Marty's amendment changes is at line 33 to initiate through, and then it also, in essence, says that this should be completed with public, with the results made public by the fall of 2020. I have Linda and then Bob on the speakers list. I have Linda, Bob, Dale, and Chris on the speakers list. Linda.
Yeah, I just wonder if we need a year and a half for it. I mean, why can't it be by the end of the fall semester 2019? Like, they're just investigating the viability of it. I don't know why that would take so long.
I think it was a confusion in the language because I thought the same thing. I think you meant end of this academic
year. End of this academic, end of the year,
so
like December 2019.
I'll take that as a point of information. Marty, do you want to clarify? Do you mean the end of fall 2019 or the end of fall 2020?
Yes. Whatever fall semester is coming up.
So you want the conclusion of 2019?
Not the one that's, but the one that's coming up. I forget. We're in 2019 now.
Yes.
I understand. So yes, okay. Fall 2020. Thank you.
Oh, 2019.
Fall 2019. Okay, so Marty.
My apologies, everybody.
Marty, by that, your amendment says that you want it done by the end of the fall semester 2020. I presume you mean 2019.
Thank you.
Is there any dissent to fixing that? Hearing none, the amendment is amended. The amendment now would read 2019 if adopted. Bob is next to the speaker's list.
I had the same point, although I do wonder a little bit if we shouldn't make it the end of the spring semester. I don't know, but I'm fine. Year and a half is too long, but maybe,
anyway.
You know.
So,
I see.
Yeah, either way.
So, well, that's something to think about, how long it takes to do a survey of that.
Yeah. Well, it's an investigation more than a survey. I move we table this pending Marcus' presentation.
Postponed, but yes.
Postponed.
Is there any dissent to moving directly into President Pollack's presentation? Hearing none, please join me in welcoming President Pollack and Associate Vice President Jason Cole of the Assembly. We are very delighted to have you here and hosting this afternoon. We're glad we could accommodate your rearranged schedule.
Thank you.
As I mentioned to a number of members of the Assembly, we received a request from Joel Molina's office to try a potentially different format for this presentation, and in doing so, we're going to have a brief update from our three committee chairs, any questions you may have, and then we'll move into a traditional question and answer session.
Sure.
So, just for context, at the beginning of this academic year, the University Assembly Executive Committee talked about a number of priorities, including revising the campus code of conduct.
Really?
Yes, which you may have heard something about. Looking at examining carbon neutrality by 2035, institutionalizing a number of procedural updates,
mm-hmm.
as well as a number of other priorities,
mm-hmm.
which have framed a lot of our work with our committees, including mm-hmm. the Campus Welfare Committee, Campus Infrastructure, Code Neutral Committee.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, I will actually first turn to the Code Neutral Committee if you have anything you'd like to add in addition to the code revisions.
In addition to the code revisions?
No, or as outside of the code revisions. Do you have anything extra?
Other than the code revisions that we've been working on since September, or really for the past few years in different forms, and now including the recommendations from your task force and our working group, we are just proceeding with our usual work in staffing the university here and the review boards, and the combination of those two activities are taking up most of the committee's time.
Thank you. Next up would be the Campus Infrastructure Committee, which is Bob.
Thank you, Matt. The Campus Infrastructure Committee is tightly focused on the carbon neutrality question, what Cornell's doing there, which is one of the UA's priority areas, as Matt says. And we have four general topics we're working on. One is to look at greenhouse gas emissions associated with commuting by faculty, staff, and students. And we're trying, informally, we've been working with the Cornell Parking and Transportation Office just to look at ways we could help the university think about encouraging electric vehicle use, which we know is a priority of Mike Kotlikoff's, and we have some ideas we think we can put forward by the end of the year. We're also very interested in more bike routes, bike parking as a way, and we're working pretty much informally. I'm not sure we'll have a formal proposal, but I think out of that office working with us, there'll be some movement. Another issue is the greenhouse gas emissions associated with business travel from Cornell. And there was a proposal through the SCLAG going back 2 years ago now for carbon offsets, with money associated with that going into local home improvements to reduce greenhouse gas emissions using the Sustainable Tompkins model, but expanding it out so that the carbon offsets would be used for lower and middle income people, heat pumps and things of that sort in the home, and include Cornell employees who do not live in Tompkins County. We think it should be a priority
of that. And the source of funding for
it? Well, the proposal before, which we're still exploring, is it's voluntary contributions on behalf of faculty who travel.
I just asked because we had looked into whether it was possible
to
charge it for grants.
Doesn't seem to be. And we've been exploring around with the Faculty Senate and others, and there's actually a fair amount of enthusiasm for faculty to do it. There have been some departments that have said they voluntarily will take it on. And again, it's a voluntary thing for faculty, but the faculty are enthusiastic. But there are impediments which have been thrown up to not make it work quite yet. So we're looking at what those are. But
because we did.
It would be private money,
grant money,
private fact. No, exactly. Can't do it. I agree with that. The third is to look at the trends in Cornell's use of energy and emissions associated with that, and evaluate how those are assessed and how it's reported. There's some thought that the university could be more transparent about that, both in terms of process and data, so we're working on that as well. And the fourth is that there's been a suggestion that we restart some discussion on divestment from fossil fuels. And as a step towards that, we've invited Bill McKibben to remotely talk to the community tomorrow night about the Middlebury experience. So those are our four priorities that we're working on.
Thank you, Bob. And then next we have the Campus Welfare Committee and ET.
So we've been working on two major issues. The first is looking into expanding the Cornell childcare facility. And so we have anecdotal evidence that the wait list for that facility is very expansive, and there are examples of children aging out of the wait list, and efforts to contact Bright Horizons, which is the service provider, to kind of look into how that waitlist works, haven't been straightforward. We've had instances of them like not sharing that information with us. And therefore, we've crafted a resolution asking the administration to launch an investigation. We do see a tremendous opportunity. If there's adequate demand, then why not have a bigger facility that's a win-win for both suppliers and constituents of the university? The second thing, which we've been doing for a long time, both my predecessors and I, is the tobacco survey, the tobacco and nicotine use survey. So about 94 New York State colleges are all tobacco-free, and Cornell wants to become one of them. But it's important for us to have community buy-in, and so we're looking into crafting this survey that gauges the attitudes of individuals on this campus about tobacco. So right now we've been meeting with IRP, which is the Research and Planning, and representatives from the Squirton Center. So we're working towards getting that survey implemented or sent out to the public by either this semester, or the end of this semester, or worst case scenario at this point, next semester, September.
That's really good. Can I ask a question to the CJC? So,
As
you know, that is a very high priority. We've been working very hard in general to implement many of the recommendations of the Presidential Task Force. I won't, unless people want, go through them. Quite a number have been implemented, and you can go on the web page and look at them. But I have to say, when I talk to students Inevitably, the first thing they ask me about is what's happening with the code, and I tell them that the UA is working on it and that we should have something by the end of the semester. But I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen a draft. Can you say a little bit more about where you are and when we might be able to see a draft?
So, for the most part, our draft has been on our agenda, and we can definitely send you a copy.
That would be great.
We've been working on. I know Matt has been working directly with the University Council to discuss specifics in the draft, and if I had been under the impression that you hadn't been given access to it, I definitely would have emailed you.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not blaming anyone. Yeah. I just want to make sure, because I'm just trying to be clear here. Students ask me about this all the time. Why aren't you doing something about this? And I say, it's in the UA's hands, so I want
to
make sure that...
our priorities are incorporating, first, separate from the task force recommendations and our working group's recommendations, we're finding ways to work on the language from all of the amendments that did not get into the code last spring because of the omnibus resolution that was sent to you that had to be rejected. So we're working on incorporating those into the required sections. In terms of the recommendations from the task force and the working group, our first priority is reorganizing the entire document.
Good.
So we're not even looking at simplifying language with that necessarily. We will come along with it, changing where things are in terms of administrative details that students don't need to know, moving those either to footnotes or the back of the document. And then when we actually do the reorganization, making sure that things are where they're supposed to be. So a student can go through and see where all the violations are, where all the responses are, go to a specific section, and be able to see all of the administrative details in the document and have them all be in one
good.
Place.
That's good. I have long thought that one of the most important things we can do is separate the expectations and standards from the adjudication processes. Right now, that they're so interleaved, it's just enormously confusing to read.
And as well, we are definitely incorporating the biggest amendment, which is an earlier draft, which has already been amended over the past 2 weeks, is in today's document. If you want to take a copy with you or look at it
now. I
would,
yeah, sure.
I'll
get it now. I'll take it up.
Yeah. The language is on hate speech and harassment, and those changes that were recommended specifically by our working group, and that language has been discussed for over a year.
Does it actually use the phrase hate speech?
It does not use the phrase hate speech. I apologize.
Concerns
harassment against individuals
great.
In protected class.
Great.
And so it
good.
Makes clear our definition of harassment and then expands it specifically to make it clear that harassment against individuals
great.
In protected class will not be tolerated.
Great.
Additionally, the whole plan, what we want to get done this semester with what the time we have left and being able to work with you, of course, to make sure that those can actually get into the document is that when we leave this spring, we want to have a reorganized document that if you want to just break it off in the middle to take what is relevant to students and have that be at the beginning of the document, turn that into a simplified handbook or use it in any other capacity, that can be done. And right now with the
that's
current
great.
Code, it's impossible.
Yes,
and
okay.
One final point is looking at Title IV and trying to find out whether or not that is necessary, and those are the discussions that we might want to have directly with your office about how you want that to
okay.
be included.
I'm happy to help in any way. It's incredibly important to the students. It's also, believe it or not, incredibly important to the board. The board is always asking me. So I'm getting it from both ends, so it'd be really great. I really appreciate this update. It's very, very helpful.
Absolutely, and so there's a teeny bit on that. My report to the Board of Trustees is at the March 22nd meeting.
Right,
my written report, yes, next week. My written report actually devotes over half of its part to the code overhaul. I had the pleasure of meeting with Kelly, Madeline Wessel, and Joel to talk about progress and working close with the CDC to make sure that we have a draft. Our hope, again, the draft is public. I'm happy to circulate it with your office at your convenience. It's still rough in that I'm meeting with, for instance, we're also talking about incorporating mediation into the code. There's a pilot program, but this is I'm talking with people who are running that this week to make sure that our language is true and correct, and our plan is to make sure it's done by the end of the semester.
And this is totally your call, but if you are comfortable sharing your written report with the board with me in advance,
I'd be delighted to.
Because I'm just making sure I'm on the same page with you with what I say to them.
I'd be absolutely delighted to.
Okay.
I sent it in last week, so I can share it later.
Oh, okay.
Later,
yeah, if you could send it to me, that'd be great. I mean, I could probably get it from Kristen, but it'd be great.
Of course,
okay.
I'll send it later this evening.
Thank you. This is really, I mean, I find this, we did this with EA as well, and we're going to do it with Student Assembly, too. It's just really helpful, I think, to have a two-way sharing of information. So thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So in that case, if anyone has any other just general questions or comments to the president, please raise your hand or placard. We're very happy to be able to do this. But is there anything else aside from the code that you'd like the assembly to work on, look into, or anything else that any questions you may have?
No, right now that is I have to say the highest priority vis-a-vis the assembly.
Okay. Thank you very much, Marty. I have Marty and Richard.
Jeff, thank you very much for being here.
Nice to see you.
I wonder what kinds of questions students are asking about the code. I mean, what are the objections? What are the issues?
I can tell you, I can put them in two big buckets. One is, are we being responsive to the request to beef up the definitions of harassment, to make them consistent with the state, to strengthen what we had there, which I agree with them was not strong enough. The other goes to it's incredibly legalistic, I can't read it, I look at ones from other universities and it says, these are the things you shouldn't do, and if you are accused of doing them, these are the steps you're doing it, and I try to read our code and it's like trying to read a law book. Those are the two categories of comments I get all the time.
Thank you. And just on that, the definition of harassment we're debating is, I believe, almost identical to one on the new task force. It's on actually the back of our agenda, so you want to grab it the way out.
Yeah.
And then also, we are, again, trying to ensure that it's not legalistic. And it really just says, here are the offenses, list them, here are the penalties, and then there's a brief summary of procedures. But the actual.
Yeah, and the procedure. I understand that the procedures will necessarily be complicated.
Yes.
It's when those complicated procedures are interleaved with the statements that. It's just very. I have a hard time reading it, and you hand it to a 17 year old who's starting college. It's
yeah. Next is Richard and NT.
Hi,
Richard.
So I have two questions. One is concern to faculty generally. Which is that the number of students, undergraduate students, is increasing faster than the number of faculty. And this has been true for some time. And so I would like some thoughts on that and where this is going. And is this down the road, can this be reversed a bit so the faculty can be restored? The second question actually comes out of your report to the Faculty Senate, I think, 2 years ago.
I wasn't here 2 years ago.
Well, then it has to be last year. But so anyway, it was this, that there were problems with the endowment that had to be unwound, and the performance of the endowment was affected by that. And the endowment performance, according to the Times, is still at the bottom of the
No, it's not. It's right in the middle.
It's 4.6.
It was right in the middle last year.
Yeah. So are those problems? But the question is really.
So let me answer both those. On the former, for the details of the plan, you'll need to ask the provost. But what I can tell you is that the plan is that as the student body grows, once the North Campus residence halls open, there will be money available to do more hiring. Now, the imbalance you're talking about really varies school to college, right? You see it more in some schools and colleges than others. But the provost has enough control that he can distribute those dollars in ways that make a difference. So the place that's really out of balance compared to anywhere else on this campus is CIS. I mean, they're teaching something like 11% of the student credit hours with about 3%. Charlie knows this. It's his department. So the provost is working on this, and there's a plan for it. But, as with anything else, it's a matter of balancing resources, trying not to have tuition go too high, trying to keep faculty salaries up, trying to keep plans up to speed and so on. But there is definitely a plan as the new students roll in to use a good chunk of that money for faculty. The endowment issue, no, it's not completely solved at all. It will take several years, right? Because what they do, what these funds managers do is they lock into funds and you have a time frame during which you can roll them out. So Ken Miranda has been slowly rolling them out. But if you look at every year, they show me a chart. I'm not actually, to be completely honest, I'm not actually sure that comparing to the Ivy Plus is necessarily the right peer group. I mean, why think that we are the same as Brown? But nonetheless, that's the peer group we look at. And you definitely see the year before last, the year that Ken, the most recent, we are in the middle of the pack. This is a tough year so far. All the investments are down overall. But there's definitely an improvement, no question.
Can I follow up just briefly on that? One of the rumors that runs around, and it's just a rumor, I have no way, you can scotch it if you want, is that the endowment it invested heavily in Puerto Rican bonds. Is this the case?
No.
Okay.
No. There is investment through one of there are some Puerto Rican bonds in the overall portfolio, but they didn't go out and invest heavily in Puerto Rican bonds. But let me be clear, there are Puerto Rican bonds in the investment pool out of this big $8 billion endowment.
Thank you. And just very briefly, actually, in terms of the CS, at least know that my speaking to students at CS and the oversubscription of those classes or as a stay or only classes has been brought up, and I'm happy to hear it being addressed.
Well, so let me tell you what the story there is. The provost has actually told Greg Morissette that he can hire. The constraint is not from the center. Mm-hmm. The constraint is the number of faculty that are out there, quality faculty that are out there and available, because the over-enrollment in computer science is not unique to Cornell. A, it's everywhere in the country, everywhere, and B, the Googles and the Amazons and the Microsofts of the world are paying salaries that are quite literally, if not a whole order of magnitude, a half an order of magnitude more than what we can pay. If you're based, so when I was at Michigan, we could hire a large number of adjuncts from the Detroit area to come in. It's a lot harder to do that in Ithaca. So the limiting factor is the number of people, not any attempt by the central. We would put as much resources as we could, because it's not good for the students, but it's also not good for the faculty, mm-hmm. and we have great faculty in that school.
Thank you. Next on Spiritus is T.
I see. So I just wrote down my thoughts just so that it could be coherent. So I'm an undergraduate student, and last Thursday, the student assembly actually hosted two teach-ins, one by the Students for Justice in Palestine, mm-hmm. and the other by the Cornellians for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
A standout theme of the CFI, Dr. Cornell for Israel discourse, was that the university administration has expressed its reluctance to engage with the conversation of divesting from Cornell's connections to the Israeli regime.
Mm-hmm.
The Students for Justice in Palestine and several other student groups, which represent historically marginalized populations, however, are deeply concerned that the university is promoting injustice,
mm-hmm.
or that this statement, or this disinclination to comment on the issue is being used to prevent conversations even among students on this important issue,
mm-hmm.
a sense of we have no place in this. Considering the history of student activism for social change across the world, can we not do more? Is there a plan to at least, by the administration, engage more with the Students for Justice in Palestine?
Yeah, so this is a really good question, and there's a couple of questions in here, and one we'll get to a point you made earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So first is the question of divestment. And the board has been very clear, and I support them on this, that at the end of the day, we are an educational institution. We're not primarily an institution for making change in the world. We make change in the world through our education, but we're not a political institution. And the role of our investment is to bring in funds to support our core mission, and the bar for divestment is extraordinarily high. This is not unique to BDS. This has been the statement on fossil fuel and so on. That's the divestment part. As far as engaging in the Students for Justice and Palestine, I did engage with them. They came to my office, as do many students. They brought me a petition. I wrote back to them, and I explained that to them. And I also explained to them my view on BDS. Just as I support free speech for our students, I have a right to free speech and my views as well. And I tried to make a very clear statement of what my views on BDS were, and I would encourage people to read it. Now, I am not ever going to say that there shouldn't be discussions of BDS. In fact, I was thrilled that the response of the student assembly was to have a teach-in. I think that's exactly what we need. I think both sides of this view need to really do education. I think it's really easy to jump to one conclusion or another, and there needs to be more dialogue about it. But I was expressing my view on it, which I think is well within my right, and I was doing it, frankly, as someone who is deeply concerned about issues of racial injustice and of discrimination, and who always speaks quickly when I see cases in which I see that, in which it feels to me like that's what's happening.
Thank you. Next in speaker, this is Logan.
Hello.
Hi.
So I wanted to ask you, outside of the student inquiries that you're receiving about the code provisions and mm-hmm. suggestions, over the past semester or year, what are the other concerns or inquiries that students are commonly coming to you? And if there's a overlap between the graduate and professional students and undergrad?
Yeah. The number one concern I hear from students is mental health. And This is not, again, this is by no means unique to Cornell. When I go to AIU president's meetings, when I go to Ivy president's meetings, when Mike goes to the provost meetings, this is the number one concern across campuses in this country. The latest data is that by age 24, something like 74% of students will say that they've had a mental, not say, I don't mean in that terms, but will attest to having had a mental health crisis. And so although we are just investing hand over foot, it has seemingly been impossible to keep up with the demand. Because of that, Ryan Lombardi is launching a very expansive look, not just at cats. Not, you know, that has been our approach. Let's hire more cats counselors. Let's hire more counselors. But at what we're doing broadly, even to issues, and students don't actually like this, but I do think this is important, even to issues of whether we ought to be providing more education on healthy sleep habits. I know it sounds patronizing. I don't mean it behave patronizing, but there is very solid evidence of the link between lack of sleep and depression and anxiety. It's always been a problem for college students, but in the technology era where people sleep with their phone next to their bed and where they're looking at blue light until they... So anyway, I use that as just one example. We are trying to look broadly to see what we can do. It's not that we're not aware of it. It's not that we're not investing in it. It's that it's a national crisis, and we're all trying to sort it out. That's by far the number one issue I hear from students.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm really happy to hear that we're investing so much in mental health, because obviously it's an epidemic across campuses, and in Ithaca we're blessed with bad weather and
that probably
to more trouble. So I just wanted to ask about the education on your example for healthier sleep habits. Would that be something outside of CAPS? Because I know that students can see, like, behavioral therapists.
Yeah, I was just using that as one example. So what we're thinking of, so think of it like a public service announcement, like a public service will push out more information to students about the importance of healthy sleep habits, about, again, may not like it, but the idea that if you could shut your screen down an hour before you go to bed, the lack of blue light could make a real difference. And I mean that just, I don't mean that as like a catch-all. I was just giving you that as one narrow example of looking at mental wellness more broadly and not just cats. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
And Logan, the Assembly has worked with Cornell Health on a number of initiatives to try and address mental health. I'm happy to share that with you after the meeting.
I've been here for a while.
Well, there's also some stuff we've done outside of the meetings in terms of documents I can share. So. Absolutely. I have Bob and Linda and Dale. So, Bob.
Okay. So thank you for coming and for your openness. I want to just raise an issue which you may or may not be aware of. I'm teaching a big class, hundreds of students, and I got an email from Student Services about 3 weeks ago saying that one of our students had not paid the tuition and therefore they could not sit in the class anymore, and I had to prohibit them from coming to class. Yeah, well, I inquired. I called up Student Services and said, you know, this is, I know we need to figure out how to get tuition out of students, but on the other hand, this is incredibly disruptive to this individual and informatic. And the people I talked to said that they thought it was an appalling policy, too, but they were under strict orders to try and get tuition from whoever.
I know nothing about this.
That's why I'm raising it. And I asked a little bit further. Several people called me back and said that, you know, they were glad I raised it as an issue.
Yeah,
and
I've never
turns out there are about 30 such students a year across campus that fall into this category. And there must be some better way to handle it. So, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate raising that. I don't think about that.
Next is Linda.
Hi, Linda.
Hi. So I'm not sure, you know, if I will be here. And so I want to take the opportunity to engage with you. You seemed very positive about the tobacco survey.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd love to hear how you'd like to see the process. Once we have the data, how would you like to engage with the University Assembly to see the conversation move forward?
I am positive about it. You know, I'm 2 years in, so I much less anymore refer to my previous job. We did do something like this in my previous job, and it was quite successful. I think the important thing, and it sounds like you're doing it, is broad engagement. I think, you know, anything at a university, you have to start by engaging with the people who are going to be infected by it. And this, mostly, it sounds like, will be faculty and staff. Although I guess there's a lot of Jewel, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Cornell Health is saying it's increasing by 40% a year.
So I think the issue is to find out what people's thoughts are, find out what the options are. I mean, is this going to be, and I don't have a view on this, is this going to be no tobacco anywhere? Is this going to be no tobacco in any of our buildings? Is this going to be, you know, tobacco zones, you know, and just keep people involved. I would actually, he's going to kill me for saying this, but I would point to the man sitting next to you, because I think Charlie did a brilliant job in engaging people when we were putting together the consensual relations policy. And I would use the same sort of process. Lots of information on the web. This, by the way, I didn't mention, because I know you wanted to do mostly Q&A, but this is one of the things we're trying to do with the core values statement. And I know Mary has been here, is coming back. She's been out on the road constantly. We're going to put together a draft, and we're going to put it up on the web. We're going to get feedback. We're going to come back to the assemblies. I think in the end, no matter where you come down on this issue, there are going to be people aren't happy, but at least you people want people to think they've been heard, and, you know, not everybody's going to agree, so somebody's going to be unhappy.
Just to clarify, so would you be open to then having a, you know, working group working on that policy and bringing it around and getting lots of feedback?
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Okay. I thought that's what that was my impression of what you were doing.
We're doing a survey right
okay.
now.
Well, so I would start with the survey,
right?
Because if the survey shows you that nobody's interested in this, but if the survey shows you that this is something of interest, I mean, this is a public health issue. I'm mm-hmm. sure you should definitely. I'd be totally open to that.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on the speaker list is Dale.
Yeah, I really wanted to follow up with T's comments, and I don't have a question, and I'm not expecting to get an answer on any of what's going on with BDS, but I suppose this might be the right forum for this. I do want you to be aware that the teach-ins were just the beginning of mm-hmm. the conversation to the understanding of many students, and I don't know how much you can glean from the sun, but it's going to continue.
Yep.
There probably will still be a resolution, and we understand that you're probably already going to reject, based on your earlier statement, most of what the resolution requests, and I suppose I want to say that the statement that you put out, while making it very clear where your office stands, it does put the student assembly in a very difficult position where it's now understood that the student assembly is as far as it's going to go.
I appreciate that. And had the Students for Justice in Palestine not basically taken the demands they sent me and turned it into a Daily Sun editorial, this would have been between Students for Justice in Palestine and me. They would have written to me. They expected a response. They asked me for the response. I sent them a response. But they chose to put it in the Daily Sun. And then you know.
And I'm not questioning.
No, but I'm just but I'm just saying. I did not want it out there precisely because I didn't want to get ahead of the student assembly. Mm-hmm. But they chose to write an op-ed piece for the Daily Sun. And basically, at that point, I did not feel, just like I would not feel in any other circumstance where I felt that there was a charged issue that, to my mind, has a layer of discrimination. And I want to be very clear and very explicit. I do not equate criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. I want to be as explicit as I can about that. Frankly, I'll be blunt. I have a lot of problems with many of the Israeli policies, just as I do with the American policies. But I personally feel that BDS... the BDS movement skirts very close to discrimination, and just as I would feel obliged to speak up if there were an op-ed piece that had a lot of discrimination, you know, I felt like it was my duty at that point.
And then all I would ask is that your administration keeps an eye on what's going to happen.
Oh, believe me, we do.
But there might be times not just where a response is required, but where support might be needed from the Office of the President in just following how this is going to proceed and making sure that there aren't conversations that are hateful towards anyone involved or that students feel like the conversation is directly ignoring their concerns. And we're going to be getting that from people on both sides of this conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure the student
assembly... But I think we need to be a little careful here, right? You don't want me shutting down conversations.
No, that's exactly what I don't want. I just want you to keep
right.
an eye on what's going on. And
yeah, I can keep an eye on what's going on. But when you say... So I will say this. You know, people always ask me, why are you such a strong proponent of free speech? Again, and I'm not... I think we need to do much more against harassment. That's not my point. I think this is the perfect example, because I think that on both sides of this issue, statements of belief get interpreted as hateful statements on the other side. I don't want to shut any of that down. I think these are incredibly complicated. This is an incredibly complicated political situation in which there should be lots of conversation, and people are going to have to learn how to listen to each other and not immediately view it as hateful conversation.
I hope the student assembly can foster that conversation.
Thank you. I have Chris next on the speakers list, and if anyone else has wants to speak, please raise your hand or placard. We are coming up on time, so after Chris, we may have time for one more question.
Hi, Chris.
President Pollack, hi. As an employee, I think about One Cornell a lot, and
good.
I was wondering if you have any recommendations on how to effectively build stronger ties between Geneva, New York City, and Ithaca so that we can continue One Cornell and not feel like separate places.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, that's a great question, and on the, I have a better answer on New York than Geneva because the New York the New York activities are more expansive. So, you know, there was a working group which started with faculty, as is appropriate, looking into what should our vision be? What should we look like in New York 10 years from now? What kind of activities could we take on? That visioning group led to a bunch of recommendations, led to a bunch of proposals for seed funding, and those activities are now making their way out into the units and so on. There are also individual small programs. Actually, I don't know if this one is public yet, but I do know that one of the schools is going to also provide some seed funding for programs. I think what you want to do is you want to keep your ears open. There have been meetings. Kelly, help me out there. Weren't there some meetings that involve?
I know they involve students and staff.
I don't know if there's staff yet. But it's a good point. We should involve staff as well. So there have been meetings, idea generation meetings. To a large extent, that's the mode we're still in, pilot programs and idea generation. Geneva's a more interesting question. It's closer. It's also a little bit narrower in focus, and I think the What school are you in?
I'm from CIT.
CIT. Because most of the connection there comes through PALS. Anything else?
So, that being said, we have no speakers list. Is there anyone else with a final question? Hearing none, please join me. Rena.
Yes, I'd like you to know.
Hi, Rena.
Hi. It's just so the graduate school has been having this event of, you know, postgrad events for grad students to write to the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee and Appropriations Committee regarding some proposed budget cuts to research and graduate education in general. I wonder if you could give a brief sort of like a update on whether or not you're lobbying for that or...
Yeah, well, we've been watching... I may ask Jason to speak to this because this gets run out of the Government Relations Office, but the new budget that just came out today...
Yesterday.
It's terrible. Mm. So...
And that was just high level. The details will come out next Monday, and the devil in those details will likely be even worse.
But
so
we do have folks in Washington who are constantly working with our legislators. It's also at the state level. In fact, we have a big meeting on Monday. The provost, me, four of our deans, and several trustees are meeting up in Albany with leaders there. But at least the president's budget now. You know how this works, right? The president's budget comes out, but the budget that Trump put out is absolutely terrible for higher ed. So keep writing those letters.
Okay.
Oh, on that note, thank you very much
for
joining us.
Have
a good night. I will get you that report this evening. If you'd like, we have a hard copy of this. I can send you an electronic copy.
Could you send me an electronic copy? Because
I
don't do paper.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Have a good evening. Thanks so much.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much. Moving next and back into our agenda, we're back on Resolution 3, examining the need to augment the Cornell Child Care Facility. Before President Paul arrived, we were talking about a proposed amendment made by Marty Hatch regarding changing the timeline for the amendment to, from the time of the report to from the end of academic year 2019 to 2020 to the fall semester of 2019, which will be this coming fall. We are on the speakers list. Bob, we just finished. I had Dale and Chris. You may or may not remember your points, but... Dale, you'd like to speak on
that. Yeah, I just think that we might want to make just another resolve clause about asking when the report should be completed, because it kind of gets confusing who the subject is, and the verb doesn't really match with the initial subject of the president commissioning the commission, and then she's not the one who's then asking for the report. So just put it as a new sentence. Also, do we change when it has to be initiated by? Because it looks like it can be initiated by the end of spring 2020, but you want the report by the end of fall 2019.
Yeah, Marty's amendment would strike that portion and then replace it with the results. Yes, we don't care when we get started, we just care when we get the results.
Can I ask something?
Of course, Dee.
So, why not just do online 35 rather than to initiate, to complete, and publish? Oh, complete and publish an investigation. How about just to complete? I mean, and then we could get the information from them. Because I feel like the whole subject verb agreement and everything is getting messed up.
Is it?
On line 35. So just like have the be finally resolved as it is presently, but on line 35 rather than initiates complete. So completes an investigation.
So the president is completing the investigation and initiation. The president is issuing the report.
The president commissions the university. So commission starts. So I'm reading from line 32. The university assembly requests that President Marta Pollard commissions the university divisions of that, in collaboration with the director of Cornell University Child Care Center to complete by the end of. And then it would be fall 2019, an investigation into the liability of expanding Cornell University Child Care Center.
Marty, if you'd like to respond to that, because it's talking about amending your amendment, you're welcome to.
Well, I think Dale's point is that there'd be a subsequent, in other words, my suggestion and amended to be the investigation be completed by when an investigation is completed, it's reported to the and that the results of this investigation be made public by the end of the fall semester 2019. It's what we have now, right?
Your amendment, in essence, would say yes, it'd be made public by the end of fall 2019, correct?
Okay. So be made public. I guess, Dale, your point is that it should be a report should be made public, and a report written and be made public.
So I guess the question is, do we want it to be completed by the end of fall 2019 or spring 2020? Because that will change all the amendments. What does the assembly decide?
So what the resolution is currently written says end of the academic year 2019-2020. My sense from the discussion has been that the assembly is currently trending towards requesting completion by the end of fall 2019. That being said, we have not formally taken an action on that, but based on the comments that have been said, it appears that's where we're trending.
So then I move to amend the amendment to replace initiate with complete, and to replace end of the academic year 2019 by the end of the fall 2019 academic semester. And then to add as a be it finally resolved after line 36 that upon completion of this investigation, a report be made public by the end of spring 2020.
If that resolves.
Or with the more specific language that Marty has about making the report public.
Is there a second on that motion?
Question.
So there's a question. Clear information, yes.
Why would it take
a
semester
to
make it public?
Public?
That seems too long.
Okay, so then just upon completion, it be made public. It doesn't matter.
Wait, so what is this language?
I will read it. I'll read it in 1 second.
Well, I think right now to line 35, it's initiate with complete, and then say by the end of the fall 2019 academic semester.
Okay.
So the language the chair has is, this is for Marty's amendment, we would keep his change on line 33, and then on line 35 it would read, in collaboration with the director of the Cornell University Child Care Center, to complete by the end of the fall semester 2019 an investigation of the viability of expanding the Cornell University Child Care Center, a new be it finally resolved clause saying that upon the completion of the report, it shall be made public.
The change on 33 was canceled.
Yeah, we don't need
the change. Well, Marty's amendment still stipulates to that.
Okay.
Marty can withdraw the amendment, we can vote on it, yes or no.
We have finally resolved that the University Assembly requests Mark Paul to initiate.
Commission.
The University
Division of
the
Facilities.
So,
to be
friendly amendment, whatever it is, commission.
So, Marty, in that case, are you saying you wish to withdraw your amendment for line 33? And leave it as commissions?
Look, the purpose of my thing is to try and get this thing speeded up and to get some hard results. So I suggest that I withdraw my initial, and the seconder can withdraw his or her second, and that we just simply get language together which satisfies Dale or whoever, and that there'll be a report issue as well. I think the results of this investigation being made public is sufficient, because, there's not going to be somebody standing up in the middle of the arts quad and yell at it.
So we ask that you keep your whole amendment on the table on the floor, but just remove the changes to line 33.
So, if I may, and I'd ask the committee to the chair, in this case, we're in a bit of a Robert's rule, our rule. Digression. So, Marty, what you're saying is you wish to withdraw your amendment to line 33 and leave it as is. Is that correct? The line 33 alone, which is what I believe what you just said. So, in essence, you leave the word commission instead of changing it. Is that correct? So in that case, Marty is asked to withdraw his amendment because it was formally made in second. Is there any dissent to Marty withdrawing that portion of his amendment? Hearing none. That portion of it is drawn. Line 33 is currently not proposed to be amended. That being said, moving to where we currently are, Dale made a motion to amend the remainder of the amendment such that it will change it to initiate by the end of line 35 to read to initiate by the end of the academic year. By the end of the academic semester, by the end of the fall 2019 academic semester, an investigation into the viability of expanding the Cornell University Childcare Center, and then adding. Be it finally resolved afterwards, be it finally resolved that upon the completion of the report, it shall be made public. Dale made that motion. Is there a second on that motion? Is that second? There's a second. Okay, so we will now move into discussion on the amended amendment. I have Chris and then Logan on the speakers list.
So, as someone that's in a family planning phase, I am totally in support of this because it might directly affect me, and that is great. I have a question about Bright Horizons' response.
So, Chris, is your comment about the resolution or the amendment?
The resolution.
Well, that can I ask you, we're talking about the amendment, so I will put you on the speaker list once we're done with the amendment.
Sure.
So then, Logan, is your question about the amendment or the resolution?
It's about the amendment.
Okay. Logan, please go ahead.
I just suggest that we further look into line 32 and potentially just change the be it finally resolved since we've added be it finally resolved and just add that into one.
That's not a problem. Robert's rule allows the chair to address typos as needed. If we add a finally resolved, I'll just address that as it becomes a typo then.
With that, I move the question on the amendment to the amendment.
So there's a motion to amend, motion to call the question on the amended amendment. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a second. Is there any dissent? Hearing none?
No, but just, is this word initiate still in there?
Yes. So I was going to read what I have is the text of the amendment. Is on line 35, it will read, line 34, in collaboration with the director of the Cornell University Child Care Center to initiate, by the end of the fall 2019 semester, an investigation into the viability of expanding the Cornell Child Care Center, then adding a new, be it finally resolved, that upon the completion of the report, that it shall be made public. Period. To complete.
To complete instead of to initiate. Yeah.
My apologies. Okay, so I now have complete there. My apologies. I was trying to clear out Marty's language. So, okay, line 35 to complete by the end of the fall 2019 semester, and then be it finally resolved that upon the completion of the report, it shall be made public.
Yes.
Is an understanding? Okay. So there's been a motion to vote. There's been a second. Is there any dissent to voting? Hearing none. Is there any dissent to the amendment? Hearing none, the amendment as written is passed. Line 35, and I'll read, to complete by the end of the fall 2019 semester investigation into the viability of expanding the Cornell University Child Care Center, be it finally resolved that upon the completion of the report, that it shall be made public. We are back into full regular discussion on the resolution. I have Chris on the speaker's list.
My question is regarding the Bright Horizons and their response or lack of response, and can you give some insight as to what we've done at the committee level to engage with them and where we got?
So we've called them several times, and they just won't release their information to us because we're not parents. And then we say we're the university, so we don't release information.
Okay, so there hasn't been like an in-person meeting to kind of explain, or there hasn't been a communication where you're trying to explain what you're actually interested in, as opposed to like requesting the data. And that's where sort of stuff.
No, there's no request for an in-person meeting.
Okay. And then for the fact that we're going to pass a resolution that then is going to create work for facilities, campus service, budget planning, human resources, has any of those departments been engaged, or is there like an inkling from the committee that this is a direction we are hoping that they're going to go? Or is this going to be sort of like, surprise, here's work to do?
So we have this list, and we have this list as an exhaustive kind of proposal, so that like there's like everyone who could possibly be involved is covered. But in all honesty, it's probably just going to be human resources saying, like, now that President Pollack has requested this, like, you have to release the information. Because we've even had information from parents that, like, the waitlist that they receive is actually inaccurate because their children are waiting even longer than that waitlist says. So in general, like, obtaining that waitlist information is very dicey. So we do just want this extra now backing and leverage from the administration so that they give us as accurate information as possible. But this honestly, probably not all of these people need to be engaged.
Thank you.
That exhausts my speaker's list. Are there any else who would like to comment, make a comment or question or amendment on the resolution as it sits in front of the assembly? Seeing no speaker's list and no one there, no one else with a motion or question, the assembly has the following choices before. We can postpone this till next meeting, we can choose to vote on it, or we can choose to amend the table or further discuss it. Are there any motions around the resolution? Richard?
I move to pass.
There's a motion to call the question on the resolution.
Second.
There's a second. Is there any dissent to voting on the resolution as it is amended in front of you now? Hearing none, all those who are in favor of the resolution as it currently stands, please raise your hand or placard. All who are opposed, the chair shall abstain. By a vote of 11-0-1, this resolution passes. Congratulations. That brings us into our, we have a minute or two left. We have a final quick item, which is discussion of revision of the campus code of conduct. It's a holdover from our meeting last week. We discussed the proposed language in the back of our agenda relatively exhaustively. Considering we are at time, I would ask that briefly, are there any new comments or questions that had not been brought up last week concerning this language? Seeing none? Seeing none, that exhausts our agenda. I would actually ask, though, and I neglected this beginning, for those who don't know, Pamela Hampton, the coordinator of the Office of Assemblies, has left the office to take another position inside at the university. And given that Pam is a former chair of the Assembly and worked quite exhaustively the past few years to support us, I wanted to read into our minutes a formal appreciation for her and also ask the Assembly to formally, through motion, state their appreciation. So, as the chair, I'd have to make the motion to enter into our minutes and the record and a formal appreciation for the service of Pamela Hampton to the Office of Assemblies and the Assembly.
Second.
I'll object. Thank you.
Good.
Actually, we just lost three. We have four until Richard walks out.
Richard, you can't leave.
There's a motion, there's a second. There's 11 in the room, which is quorum by one.
We have a quorum.
There's a motion, a second. In this case, I would ask that the Assembly pass this by unanimous consent.
Unanimous.
Hearing none, no dissent, that resolution is passed.
Yeah.
I will convey
perfect.
As appropriate.
Thank
our meeting is, we are at the end of time. Is there any dissent to adjourn the meeting?
Yes.
Again. Hearing none, the meeting is adjourned at 5:59. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a good evening.
Bye.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, so I'm going to talk to Charlie left. I have an email to Charlie to ask to sit down and meet so we can know where we are
okay.
with that.
Can we meet?
He's reasonable.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Wait, absolutely.
Yes, because I want, it's like the tobacco thing. I think we should do the tobacco thing. I think
yeah,
we should
too.
Do it.
Okay.
I don't think that there's any owners,
yeah,
long surveys.
Yes,
yeah,
so
I
hope
it's
stalling
in
the
phone.
I know.
Actually, no, I don't know. I said we were open to it. I said we were open to considering it. But I was very clear that the Committee of Assembly had a final say.
Yeah.
I necessarily said that I thought it was possible to do. We are obviously that it sounds like we are not in a position where we want to do that. We have standing authorization. We will sit down with CWC on Monday to say that, and then we can move forward.
I can't figure out how to draw.
And I can't make it, but I
okay.
really want to have a meeting.
I will want Charlie to ask for
yeah.
a request to meet him.
I think more of us than you.
With Charlie?
Yeah, with Charlie.
We have so.
Yeah.